I'm going to start by asking you to tell me a little bit about yourself, starting with your name, the right pronunciation, of course.
The right pronunciation, that is always difficult. It would be in German Michael Wüstenberg. Otherwise, they call me Michael over there. That's okay. Much more easy.
We can call you Michael?
Yes.
Wüstenberg.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm of German origin. I did all my school and university stuff in Germany and was a parish priest there for 10 years. And then I went to South Africa. I wanted to go to Africa because we had a partnership in the parish where I was working in Bremen. And I visited these people that was in West Africa, in Burkina Faso, a small village community. And I was fascinated by three things. Their work with what they call base communities, then the issue of enculturation, and lay ministries. And in their case, that was more catechists. And they had a very good training program for that. So I told my bishop in Germany I would like to experience that firsthand for some time. But since I'm not speaking French, but English with a German accent, I went to Missio and we looked for a place, and then it turned out to be at the end to go to South Africa. And I went to the Diocese of Aliwal in 92 and started working there and had a wonderful experience, very different from those I had in Burkina Faso.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it was a wonderful working. In the beginning, it was still the homeland of Transkei where I was working, because it was before the elections in 94. And we did a lot with developing lay ministry. So it was a very different thing from the catechists who normally did all the work in the villages in Burkina Faso. And we have a huge involvement of lay people taking charge of the different sections of pastoral work in the villages where we scarcely reach. So for me, it was always normal to meet one community once a month, and then they carried on their own with everything.
Is that because of the great distances?
I don't know whether one could call it this way, lack of priests or few priests at least, and so we simply didn't manage. And it is not only long distances, it's sometimes bad distances because our roads are terrible.
That's what I was going to say. One of the worst roads of my life was in the Transkei.
Yeah, so for 60 kilometers, 2 hours, and it was sometimes a regular thing.
I think it was Butterworth. Mm. I went from Butterworth to the sea.
You were at the other side.
I was at the other side.
I'm on the side where the only ski resort in South Africa is located, Tiffindale. But I was never there for skiing.
Now, as you yourself said, you wanted to go to Africa, but yeah. South Africa is a very particular reality.
Yes, and that is. I thought English-speaking Africa, when that was the option, could be Malawi, Tanzania, and they mentioned it also at Missio at that time, or perhaps even Namibia. And then the head of Missio said, "Yeah, perhaps also South Africa." And I asked him, "Is South Africa in Africa?" Yeah. And he looked at me as if I was mad. But I said, "You know, I'm now working in a nice posh suburb. Catholics were not that rich, but nevertheless, it was a posh suburb in Germany, and I don't want to end up in something similar in Cape Town or Johannesburg. I would really like to get into the African context." And but that worked
out.
And
you did.
I did, yes, very much so. I was in that district where we were, one of three white people resident among 200,000 black people. Yeah.
Now, you were there since 1992, so
yeah.
And you were there for many years afterwards, the momentous change in 94, and all the expectations. I mean, that moment really put South Africa in a very challenging position as regards the rest of the world. Right. I mean, it was a miracle what happened today, 14 years afterwards, 15 years afterwards. The situation isn't so rosy, is it?
We have 2010 coming up, World Cup, Soccer World Cup in South Africa. After 94 and 96, they won the African Cup of Nations,
and then
they went down the drain. I don't know whether, I think they didn't qualify, they qualified as hosts now, at least that. It is a difficult situation, and especially our province, Eastern Cape, it is a very difficult province. It has a legacy of two homelands to integrate them, Transkei and Ciskei.
Is the integration happening? Is it working?
It is very slow, and it's a whole mindset. Some people say Ciskei, Transkei don't exist anymore. I say it's not in the map, but it's a kind of mindset and a kind of legacy that is around. And if people say apartheid is over, legally that is true, but socially and, in the way people have access to facilities, it is still existing what was around. So I am very worried about, for example, the state of the educational system in our province and the high failure rate at schools at the end. And that just prolongs the being disadvantaged for young people, not being able to access proper training for professions afterwards because they simply don't have the basic skills.
But why? Are there or not schools, or are there not teachers?
But they are often not very well equipped. Motivation is very low. Teachers work under harsh conditions sometimes. I say, what is it if you teach physics without water and electricity? That is very, 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 very dry, that whole stuff. Motivation is low, and also policies are perhaps not conducive to keep people. There are some people who would like to work there, but then they don't get permanent employment and they go somewhere else where they get it. So there's a whole bunch of problems around the whole educational system. And ignorance also. By law, we have school governing bodies at the public schools, and parents actually could exercise tremendous influence on the running of schools, but often they are ill-informed about their rights and they don't know how to deal with that. And that gives leeway to anybody else who wants to do something. So there's a lot of problems in this regard. And health systems, the problem, public health. I had it just recently with a priest, a problem, who was just sent from one hospital to another one because they didn't want to treat him there. So, but that is something people experience all the time. And health workers, they claim that they are poorly paid, and if they compare themselves to others, it is probably the truth. But I was really somehow dismayed by a recent strike in the public health system, where the doctors and nurses striked and the pharmacists, and that means there was zero service for those who depend on the public system, and that means the people without money. If you have money, you can go to a private hospital, there's no problem. But they depend on that, and they often won't never see a month what they were demanding as an increase, an increment in their salaries. So I was just thinking perhaps trade unions need a kind of redemption, trying to look for other methods of making their interests heard or felt. Or can one convince patients, for example, to strike for the doctors and nurses if they say we need their services and we want them also to be good, well paid for that? But that would perhaps bring some shame also on those who see these guys who would then strike for them or demonstrate they have nothing actually on their plate. So there's a lot of questions still around. And in our area where I am, in the Diocese of Aliwal in the northeastern end of the Eastern Cape, is one of the areas with the highest emigration within South Africa. Because we have no job opportunities, and I always say, who is intelligent moves out.
They move to other parts of South Africa?
Yeah, hoping to get some jobs. Whether they get them, that is another thing, but the dream is around.
Because it's a very rural area, isn't it?
Rural farms, and farm workers are not that needed anymore because also of the increasing salaries and so on. So there is very few job opportunities.
What is the main economic strength of the area?
I always say we are very, very generous also to my fellow bishops. we give what we have, our resources, we just simply give them away, and that is our people. We don't have natural resources in that area. There's a little bit of agriculture, yes. We have in Aliwal two companies. One is a mill, another one is a little dairy. Otherwise, we have shops and workshops, and that is not a very healthy economy for that matter.
What is the ethnic makeup of the population?
In town, we have still some white people, so-called white people. That means normally of of Afrikaner origin, Afrikaans-speaking, that is a majority there, a few English-speaking. In terms of Christian confession, they are normally Dutch Reformed or Anglican or Methodist.
Right.
Methodist Church was very strong in our area. The Catholic Church is almost entirely black. We have very few white ones in Aliwal. And if I look at our cathedral parish, they have, I think, 160 parishioners, and most of them are nuns, and old ones for that matter, and white ones. So it's a very untypical, it's not a real parish, actually. We have our people normally in the townships of these little towns which are scattered in our area, or in these former homelands in the villages where there's a lot of people.
It must be very difficult to take your ministry to an environment and a population such as the one you describe. In the sense, it's not concentrated, if I'm not mistaken from what you're saying.
It's scattered. That is our problem, distances, and a few priests, too few. I would need six more at least to have some better service rendered to the people.
How many priests are there?
14 active. Three of them are far beyond 70 already, and some younger priests. But we would need more. It is simply we don't manage what we should have.
What is your main activity?
Our main activity is actually training, formation for the many leaders that we have got, and maintenance. That means training also for the small Christian communities, which is a very strong focus, and we are really good at that, I think. And we have got a lot of projects in connection with AIDS. AIDS is a big economic factor also. And there we are very good as a church in providing services to orphans, to people who are suffering HIV, AIDS, and we train people for providing home-based care for them. And a lot of educational work also.
I saw the intervention you made at the Synod was focused on the connection or collaboration between laity and the ecclesial hierarchy. It's obviously a focal point for you, very important.
Well, that was my work all the time as a parish priest there in Transkei, and then when I was at Lumko Institute, also our focus was on training, training facilitators who could train the local leaders. So enabling catechists, priests, sisters who are in pastoral work, that they know how to train people who are going to conduct Sunday services, funerals, do catechesis, adult initiation, and all these different ministries, or leading small Christian communities, and how to build that and how to build the vision of the church as a church, as a communion of communities, which is one of our key terms there.
Tell me you are optimistic or hopeful as regards the future of this focus.
No, I am, and even with the Synod, some people ask me, are you not too pessimistic with all mentioning all these terrible things happening in Africa, and there are terrible things up to the day, to this day, today, happening, and mentioning that, and but I think pessimism would be to get stuck in that. But we are describing the past and the present, but not the future with that. That is something else. And so I think one has simply to look, to take stock of the situation as it is, name it, and get out the demons and to build something new. And I think that is what we are doing. And I was just wondering when I walked in the evening across St. Peter's Square here, and the first thing you see when you enter the Vatican is something from Africa, the big obelisk.
That's right.
Pointing up.
It's from Ethiopia, I think, isn't
it? I don't know exactly where this is from. The other ones have even inscriptions in Rome. This one is empty. You can put your whole story on it and then look up to the cross and say, that is what we do, looking in the church, if we have it, not here in the studio. But to look at a cross that which simply says there is injustice, suffering done by people to people, but that is not the end of the story. There's much more to come, and that is why what I hope for and what I'm trusting in. Yeah,
it's this synod is an occasion to speak of Africa, but it's easy. Africa is so many different things, so many different voices. You are speaking of a South Africa which is so different to the South Africa somebody in Johannesburg or in Cape Town speaks about. And I don't think many people are very aware of your reality. Do you think it's important to have a synod such as this to be able to join your voice to those of the other African bishops? And what fruit do you think it can bear?
I think if we got the seeds here, the fruits we must produce at home, then take the seeds with us and plant it there. Whatever comes out, some people say, well, what is the synod about? And we can't save whole Africa or something like that. But we exchange our ideas. And I just said yesterday evening to one of my fellow bishops from South Africa, it is simply exciting to meet all these fine people of the church with that very different experience, and you see the faces and you don't know even through what suffering some of them really went, and to pay respect to that, to see it and to see and to draw strength from that. I think that is a very important part of it.
So it fortifies you in your mission as well.
Yeah, and then to know these guys are around. We are not always very good at cooperation, and this Africa is scattered, and it is very, it's a huge variety as you have it in Europe as well. Portugal is not like Finland.
Absolutely.
So there's a huge amount of differences, but that we have a common vision and an interest, and I think that was really one of the very fine experiences for me at the Synod.